Morning, everybody. If you can, I'd like for everyone to open your Bibles to Matthew 11. And we are going to be looking at the main focus is determining what wisdom is justified of her children. What does that mean? That's what we're going to be looking at. I personally use the King James Version. So when you hear wisdom is justified of her children, there are some people that don't understand that. They don't want it means. I'd like to take a look at that. I'd like to give a few ideas on what wisdom is, go into a determine how it's used, and then go into the parable, which I'm going to call the parable of the clock, and then try to bring that together for everybody so that we can get a picture of it, get a picture of how we can apply that. So if we look at Matthew 11:16 to verse 19, Jesus said, "But wherein shall I liken this generation? It is like unto children sitting in the markets and calling unto their fellows and saying, we have piped unto you and you have not danced. We have mourned unto you and you have not lamented. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he hath a devil. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a gluttonous and a winebibber and a friend of sinners. But wisdom is justified of her children." Okay, a little background on why Jesus is drawing that. What he is doing right there is he is drawing a distinction, and he is basically saying the generation is doing one thing. He is doing something else. John came doing one thing, and the generation didn't like it. He came doing the different than John, and yet they didn't like that either. So what you have at the beginning of chapter 11, what you have is you have John the Baptist, and basically he's in prison. He's been rejected. Jesus explains that he wasn't this great man, that he wasn't this guy that everybody was expecting. Well, what did you go into the wilderness to see? You expect in fine clothes, you expect in this powerful something man, and here you have, you're expecting this major prophet, and yet you get this kind of homely guy that just kind of doesn't really flash anybody, but he's more than a prophet. And yet it didn't satisfy him. So there's a difference between what the Pharisees wanted and what Jesus and John the Baptist had to offer. At the end of chapter 11, Jesus goes on from wisdom is justified of her children, and he begins to rebuke the generation. And he's saying that because they weren't wise enough to see what was going on in front of them, that even these churches that God destroyed in the Old Testament would have been wise enough to understand what was happening in front of them. But they weren't. So what I'd like to do, with that being our background, with that being our focal point, I'd like to look real briefly at the word wisdom and give about five different definitions, different ways that you could interpret wisdom. The 1828 definition of wisdom is the right use or exercise of knowledge. It's the choice of healthy ends and the best means to accomplish them. So in layman's terms, what is that saying? In layman's terms, what that is saying is you know what's right and you do it the right way. Okay, so you know what's best, and you know what's right, and then you know how to accomplish that. The right use of exercise or knowledge, and the choice of the healthy ends and the best means to accomplish it. Now, there's one of the five that I'm just discussing here today. There are five different elements of the application of wisdom. One element would be human learning. The way that you learn, the way that you understand could be wisdom. Acts 7:22, it says, Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in words and in deeds. So that follows our definition. He understood the exercise of knowledge that Egypt had to offer, and then he was mighty in the deeds to accomplish it. Another way that wisdom could be used is the ability to carry out certain tasks. So in Exodus 31, you have Bezaleel, and it says he was filled with the Spirit of God and wisdom. And also in the same chapter, you have Aholiab, and it says of him, in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I have put wisdom that they may make all that I commanded thee. And God is speaking of the priest's garments. He called certain men among them that could take nothing and create something and make it in a manner in which God had wanted. So that is an aspect that God terms as wisdom. Another way, so we have human learning as an aspect, and we have the ability to carry out specific tasks, to create something. Another element, aspect of wisdom would be natural instincts that is God-given. So if you look at Job 39, we have a couple different uses, one wise and one not. Job 39, 15 to 17, it says of an ostrich, because God hath, verse 16, she is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear, because God hath deprived her of wisdom. Neither hath he imparted to her understanding. What time she had lifted up herself to high and scorneth the horse. So basically, there's the lack of wisdom. It's the lack of natural instinct. In this case, an ostrich that doesn't know how to care for her young ones. It's not naturally put in there. God hasn't naturally. He has deprived her of that wisdom, of that understanding. Going further down to verse 26, he asks a rhetorical question. Doth the hawk fly by thy wisdom and stretch out her wings toward the south? So there's a natural element that the hawk has that it knows how to fly and knows how to conduct itself. And that would be the example of a good wisdom that comes from natural instincts. Another element, aspect of wisdom is fearing God and keeping His commandments. If we look at Job 28, there's a couple questions. But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Verse 12. Verse 18. No mention shall be made of the coral, which is like a pearl, or like gold, or quartz, or like fine stone, or the pearls, or the price of wisdom is above rubies. Whence then cometh wisdom, and where is the place of understanding? Verse 20, and then verse 28. And man, and unto man, he said, behold, the fear of the Lord is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. So now we have drawn how precious wisdom is, and how to get wisdom, and what it does. Okay, so we have human learning, the ability to carry out tasks. We have natural instincts that are God-given, and fearing God and keeping His commandments. And one last element that I would look at would be wisdom can be profitable words of doctrine or teachings. In Psalms 37, it says, the mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment. So there's a few kind of picture that I want to give you on what wisdom is before we get started on trying to find out what wisdom is justified of her children, with what that means. So now let's take a look at what constitutes. We can set that aside, but keep it in the back of your mind right now. And now we're going to take a look at what constitutes being a son of the Spirit. Romans 8:14, it says, as many that are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. So you have now an ability to draw a link where If you are led by the Spirit of God, you are the sons of God. Jesus said, who is my mother and who is my brother? But those that do the will of the Father. So it makes sense. It makes sense that you can be the son of the Spirit. And to explain that, you have a biological father. And because you have a biological father, you have certain physical characteristics. You have characteristics. Because you have the same nature. You have the same DNA. So if you've been born of your father, you share his characteristics. If you have been born of the Spirit and you're doing God's will as Christ did God's will, then you would be a child of God. So let me go further. If you share the same spiritual nature as Christ, then you have the same Father as Christ. Okay, now if we go even a little further. If you have the same Father as Christ, then you're a brother or sister to Christ. So if you're filled with the Spirit of God, then you are the sons of God, according to Romans 8:14. Okay, so what does this have to do with children? What does this have to do with wisdom? Why does it matter? Does it matter? What are we going to do with the information here? How are we going to apply what the Bible is trying to tell us? Okay. Exodus 8:28-3 says, and thou shalt speak unto all the wise hearted whom I have filled with the Spirit of wisdom. Okay. So if you are filled with the Spirit of God, you are the sons of God. There is an ability to be filled with the Spirit of wisdom. Okay? So let me go into what I'm going to call the parable of the clock. The parable of the clock. We have two clocks in the room. So you have numerous people that are all in a room. Okay? The clock keeps moving. And all the people are doing what they should. They're carrying out the tasks that they feel that they should carry out. They're living their lives a certain way, and all the time the clock keeps turning. Okay, all the people see this clock and they're aware that the clock exists. The clock's hands spin around the clock, and it's in a very slow, kind of deliberate manner, consistently continuing to turn. Now, while this clock is turning, some of the people move fast, some people move slow. When summer comes around, there are some who are playing in the summer, some who are working. People are doing different things. Some are working to save for the harvest, and it's not even harvest yet, but they're working to save for the winter. Some people are enjoying what they have right now. And as the clock continues in the same manner, some people leave the room, some people enter the room. Some people like to sleep, because the clock hands are moving so slow, it's not that big of a deal. Some people choose to work nonstop, thinking that at some point this clock is going to stop and they want to get as much as possible, as quickly as possible. And some people really don't even care about the clock. Okay. The gist of it is everybody in the room is doing what they feel that they should be doing, and the whole time this clock continues to move slowly, methodically, consistently, systematically, turning around, meticulously, nonstop. Okay, so now, looking at the parable of the clock, what is the clock? The clock. It's time, right? The clock is time. That's what the clock represents. Okay. The people in the room are the people who are living their lives the way that they should. So back to Matthew 11, you have the Pharisees and you have John the Baptist and Jesus. They're both doing what they think they should be doing. They're both doing what they think is right. But they're doing things totally different. And what you have is you have the clock. You have time, and the time continues to move. Now, the thing with time is a great revealer. Okay? As the clock continues, we start to become aware of the result of the choices that people made. It reveals things. Everyone thinks that they're making good decisions right now. Everybody's living their life thinking that they're making the right decision, or they wouldn't be making it. Okay? So they think somehow the decision is the best one for them. Now, some that are younger, they haven't made the decisions long enough to let the clock move, the time to move fast enough to determine whether or not those decisions were right or wrong, at least in their eyes. But that gets revealed to them over time. Time is also the great equalizer. Okay, the clock continues the same for everybody. Everybody in the room. Nobody has more time in a day than another. You make conscious decisions on what you're doing with your time. Everyone is equal in time, but somehow there are people who are better than others that make more use of the time. And when people are making wise decisions, that makes could buy them more time, if you will, because they're doing different things with their time that may produce more time. Time is also, and this is a big one, the great divider. Time will divide things. Okay? While the clock turns and everybody is in the room, some people come into the room and some people go out. Some go out due to disagreements with other people within your room. Some go out with differences in ambitions. Different views on what they want. Some go out due to death, due to passing away. Some enter the room due to birth and due to life. Some just due to changes of what they feel that their life should consist of. But over time, things will divide. People divide. Different things change. The reality is that time will divide the majority of people that are in your life. And due to the wrong circumstances, it could possibly divide your family if you're not careful. Okay, again, trying to draw this into wisdom is justified of her children. People are making different decisions and they're living life differently. Everybody thinks that they are right. What does that have to do with time? If you look in Acts 5, there's a man named Gamaliel. And while the Pharisees are discussing what to do with the disciples of Christ, Gamaliel speaks up and says, "Refrain from these men and let them alone. For if this counsel or work be of men, it will come to naught. But if it be of God, ye cannot overthrow it." In other words, what he's saying is, give it time and let's see what happens. Okay? But now let's take it even further. Instead of looking at the disciples and the Pharisees and their differences and the wise man of Gamaliel saying, let's wait, give it time, we're going to see how this turns out and see the results of these. We've seen these other people and how those things fell apart. And we didn't have to do anything to make them fall apart. Let's see what happens here. Now let's take it to Jesus and the Pharisees. Okay. So Jesus and the Pharisees, one of their biggest differences that Jesus and the Pharisees had was over the resurrection of the dead. Okay? They debated over the resurrection of the dead. Okay, Jesus lived his life in a way that very well demonstrated that he believed in the resurrection of the dead. Okay, the Pharisees lived their life in a way that very well showed that they did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. Because if they did, they wouldn't have crucified Christ thinking he was going to continue, right? They crucified him thinking it was going to be over. So they did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. Okay, they had disagreements about it. Now, in Psalm 37, it says, "The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him." Okay, so because the Pharisees did not believe in the resurrection of the dead, they sought to kill Jesus. Okay, so now you have the Pharisees and Christ, and they have a very difference on some extreme issues in that point in time on the resurrection of the dead. Okay, so what they did was they sought to kill him. Okay, they had a mockery of some trial. They brought in some false witnesses against him. They would just spat right full in his face. Okay, they mocked him. Then they delivered him to Pilate. Okay, put him on trial in front of everybody and was screaming at the top of their lungs, "Crucify him." Now, they had whipped him after this. When he was scourged, they had beaten him. They had taken flesh off of his bones with whips and chains. They led him to Golgotha, which is called the place of the skull because there were so many people that died out there. And he had to die outside of the camp because it is written, "Let him be accursed," and of the law to be hung outside the camp and hung on a tree. But now, let's look at the clock. Here's the clock. All right, the parable of the clock. The Pharisees slaughtered Christ on a stick. They put him on a tree to hang. Where are those same Pharisees right now? Where are they? They are dead. Their carcasses are in the grave and he's alive. Two thousand and 20 years later, the clock has turned, and what just happened? Wisdom was justified of her children. Who was right? So in conclusion, what are your thoughts on wisdom? Where do you go from here? What happens during your life in the room while the clock continues? How do you know what's wise? How do you know who is wise? Is there an ability to tell who is wise? Can you tell if you're a child of wisdom? Is it possible to learn to be wise, to become a child of wisdom, or are you born with it? Wisdom is justified of her children. What that means, it simply means wise decisions are revealed from wise people through time. Over time, you see what wise was and through what the wise people are doing. So I'll let you answer some of those questions for yourself, but I'd like to leave you with a quote. And I don't know who wrote the quote, but the quote is, "The course of things go to teach us faith. We need only obey. There is a guidance for each of us, and by lowly listening, we shall hear the right word." God bless.